Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have a long email here from Anonymous.
Yeah, this is a wall of text from Anon. Hope it's worth it. Let's see. Hello, thanks for taking time to answer questions. I asked a question on the demon and got a great answer from Dylan and was hoping for some clarification from either of you or Dylan if he sees these emails. Dylan, of course, Dylan Horowitz. He did a couple episodes of the LSAT Demon Daily with me recently. He's how do we describe Dylan? Very valuable member of the team. Former sure. student, killed yep. it, about to go to Harvard. Has been yeah. writing ask explanations, like dozens of ask explanations every day. Dylan's great. Anyway, okay, here comes this lengthy, multi-paragraph question. I have been studying lightly since October and properly since January, committing 100% versus 98%, as you said. I think I was nervous to fail and didn't want to commit in case I failed. It took some internal reflection to move past this, and I feel better embracing the test and challenge. Who knew the LSAT would also be therapy fodder? The upside down smiley face. Even though I have to trick myself and do a little dance beforehand to hype myself up, I feel excited to study and am enjoying the process. I drill every day and have been doing timed sections 3 to 5 times a week, rotating through the sections. I always watch every video or read explanations on anything I miss or guessed on, even if I got it right. Any comments so far?
Watch every video or read explanations. Okay, hopefully you're not watching all the videos on one question, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's times where there's like 5 videos or 10 videos of the same thing. Mm-hmm. I would rather you understand one of them than just like tick the box on all of them. You know, if there's a written explanation, I have a feeling that that probably is the most efficient way to get to understanding, just seeing it there in plain English. We speak, you know, we misspeak all the time, right? We just don't speak as precisely as we write, especially mm-hmm. with the benefit of editing. And so it's like, boy, if there's 6 videos and a written explanation, I'd hate to think that you're just like, well, let me watch all 6 of these videos and then skim through the written explanation and then potentially still not understand it.
Hopefully Anon is referring when Anon says every, he's referring to like the explanation every time he misses a question, but not
one
every video.
Per one. Yeah. One, yeah. It's a perfect illustration of what we never stop talking about, right? Which is like, lawyers are just so literal. We have to be dealing with the actual words that are on the page. So it's like, well, that's what you said. You said you watch every video. You said, I always watch every video.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we take you literally at your word, we probably think you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, one should be enough if it makes sense. Like, watch the one that's upvoted. And that's probably the best one. And if that doesn't make sense, watch another one. But I mean, you don't need to be a completionist about the videos. There's too many of them. I have heard you both discuss your thoughts on the appropriate cadence for full practice tests and was hoping for some clarification on when and how I should be taking full, that is 4 sections in one go under timed conditions, tests, especially in the time immediately prior to the real test. On one demon lesson, you note to take 20 practice tests before test day. I've also heard you say that drilling one question at a time and timed sections merged together are foundational and a good way to gauge your scores. If I need to be taking 4 section tests 1 to 2 times a week per Dylan's recommendation, I am willing to do that. I'll just need to rethink my timeline and also see about stepping back from my full-time job. Right now, my method of 1 to 2 hours a day of deep studying fits within my work schedule. I don't know if I could show up effectively for work and do the 1 to 2 practice tests a week. Again, that's fine, but I need to plan for it. So at that point, I was a little bit like, Dylan, are you telling people that they have to be doing 1 to 2 full tests a week? That doesn't sound like really that great of advice.
But no, we're always advocating 6 to 7 tests per week, you know, one a day. Yeah.
People don't get sarcasm.
Ben like, wait, what? People are writing that down.
Ben, how am I going to do that? It?
No, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No.
We maybe one test a week. Now, okay, as it comes out, diagnostic for this anonymous who's writing in, diagnostic of 166, then a full practice test in March at a 172. Okay, then down to a 160. Which, you know your own problem, Anonymous. Like, don't pretend like you don't know. So Anonymous goes, well, then I got a 160 2 weeks later. But I'm thinking that this is because I took it in a public place with distractions, which is what I had available at the time. Okay, but was foolish. Yeah, you're acknowledging that was a dumb thing to do. Don't take full-timed practice tests in less than optimal conditions. You'd be practicing under performance. Why are you practicing under performance? Okay, don't do that. Okay, question is, on what cadence should I be taking full 4 section tests versus doing the section merge method? My thought was, when people are scoring in the 170s, it becomes a lot less onerous to do a full test.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you knock out those 4 sections, that takes 2 hours and 20 minutes. 2 hours and 30 minutes if you give yourself a short break.
Yeah.
2 hours and 30 minutes ain't shit. Like, you should be able to come up with that once a week. I can't imagine that you can't come up with that time once a week. And then your review, because you're scoring so high, your review won't take as long, assuming you're not watching every video.
I mean, people ask all the time, how many full-length tests should I take? And I think we've kind of settled on this general rule of thumb that's like, hey, when you're just starting out, you're probably doing one every 2 weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I mean, it doesn't really matter on some level, but it is strange when someone doesn't take a full-length test ever and you're like, okay, why don't you experience that? But then as you get better, like you said, there takes less time to do it. Well, it doesn't take less time to do the actual test, but it takes less time to review it, a lot less time. It's a lot easier for you to review because everything you are reviewing, you get faster, right? So then I start to expect people to do them maybe once a week or, you know, maybe twice a week if you're really good. But it's not necessary because if you don't have that kind of time in your week, you can just do time sections.
Yeah. I always say, I don't care if you never do a full sit down in one sitting. Honestly, I don't give a shit. As long as you're doing 35 minute sections regularly and you're used to 35 minutes, that's how much time you have. You're probably not going to finish. You don't care whether you finish. All you care about is being accurate on the questions that you're attempting. Maybe sometimes you finish, or on games especially, you get to the point where you know you're going to finish perfectly, just because you've made the games so easy.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, if you don't ever, I didn't do any full tests before I took my test. It is very clearly not necessary and it's not sufficient. So you want to do full tests? Okay. You don't want to do full tests? Maybe also okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think you and I might disagree there. I do think that, hey, test day, you're going to do 4 sections relatively back to back. I would prefer that people experience that.
Sure.
At least a few times.
If you're afraid of it, then yeah, do full tests. If you really don't want to do it, then yeah, do some full tests. But
it doesn't necessarily have to be about fear. It's just recreating the environment that you're going, like recreating the experience that you're going to experience.
If you have test anxiety, you know,
or you just want to recreate the experience. I mean, I feel you're making these exceptions for,
I'm saying here are some reasons why you might want to. I'm not saying that that's an exhaustive list of reasons. There might be other reasons as well, but there's a certain type of person where your rational brain is going to understand that it doesn't really fucking matter. Like, if you can play the game in 35 minutes, then you can play the game in 4 times 35 minutes. It's not a test of endurance, right? Like, the purpose of it is not like, well, you really need to gear up for this. You better be ready for that 2.5 hour marathon. You know, it's because it's just not. Like, it goes by in a flash. It's just not that big of a deal. And if you're good enough at the content of the test, then it shouldn't be a big dramatic thing, right? Oh, how about this, Ben? I think maybe you would agree with this.
Okay.
Do it once. Get a 170, whatever, and then we really don't give a shit if you ever do it again. Like, you're good at,
yeah,
you know that you can do it.
Like, yeah, yeah. Well, and then you've experienced it too, right? So yeah. I guess my hesitation with just saying you don't ever need to experience this is that doing so, the LSAT requires a certain level of focus. Obviously, the better you get at that, the less draining that is on you, right? And so, but I'm still curious, like, okay, you can sit down and you can do what it takes and you can engage in the test the way you should engage with it for 35 minutes. Okay, now do that again and do that again. And
yeah, and
do
I
that
guess
again.
Something about having the sections coming at you in whatever order is kind of mm-hmm. useful, right? Like, if you just hit start and you don't know what the first section is going to be, and mm-hmm. the LSAT rolls the dice and it's like, well, here you go with some reading comp, or well, here you go with some logic games, and it's like you have, and then, you know, section two is something different, and then section three yeah, is yeah. something different, and then section four is something different. Okay, I can see how that might be worth experiencing a time or two. And don't, I'm when I say I don't care if you never do it, I'm speaking yeah. in absolutes. And sure, do it. I guess what I don't want people to do is to have like this, because it's clear to me that Anonymous is like fetishizing it to a certain extent. Like, Anonymous is like, I need to know exactly the precise cadence for, you know, yeah. is it one test yeah. a week? Is it two tests a week? Is it, I need to know exactly. And it's like, dude, let's get fucking real. Your next paragraph, you say you suck at reading comprehension. Okay.
Yeah.
Get better at reading comprehension. Like, your problem is not the cadence of your practice tests. Your problem yeah. is you suck at reading comp. You know, you've neglected it. What are you going to do about that?
Like, yeah.
It, yeah. To skim through here, right? To skip some of Anon's wall of text. But it's like, I either get a perfect score or I misgauge the tone on the last passage and miss 4 or 5. What? You didn't miss 4 or 5 because you misgauged the tone.
Maybe by misgauge the tone, Anon really means that he misunderstood what the main point was.
Yeah, that's what he means. You mean you didn't comprehend the passage. That's what you mean. You did not comprehend the passage. If you miss 4 or 5, you know, that's because you're racing. You're mm-hmm. just not solving the questions, or you did not comprehend the passage. It's not so subtle as like, oh, you just didn't catch the fine nuances. No. You don't know why they wrote that passage. You have no idea what they're talking about. You whiffed on your understanding of the main point. Because if mm-hmm. you're missing 4 to 5, you're essentially randomly guessing on the questions. If you miss 5 out of 6, that's worse than random guessing. Just keeping it real. But that's like, it's not like, oh, you know, I kind of got it. No, you didn't. You got less than 0.
It's only mildly worse, but it still is worse.
But it is literally worse than random guessing. If you miss 5 out of 6, that is worse than random chance. So let's face that.
Yeah,
that's not like, oh, I missed the tone. That's you missed the boat. Okay.
Yeah.
There's too much here.
Well, we only have one more paragraph, maybe, right?
I guess I got lost in it. You know, it's like, Anon, you're apologizing for the length of your email. You could have just edited it down. I hate to like yell at people who earnestly write us asking for advice, but I'm giving you long-term advice for like your life. When you write people asking for help, don't apologize for how long it is. Never do that. Just edit it instead. There's one more question in here. Oh, what's the last LSAT date you recommend for those applying to start law school in 2023? I think we have a perfect world answer, and then we have a exceptions answer.
Yeah, perfect world would be August. Have everything done, have your best score on record by August so that you have a little extra time. It's like showing up to meetings 5 minutes early as opposed to 2 minutes late.
Yep.
You have the time to get everything in order so you can apply on day one for most schools, which is early September. Some schools, day one may be early October, but the point is you're ready for any school that's going to open its application cycle in September, and you have all your ducks in a row.
Yep.
And you're going to come up with things that you realized, oh, shoot, actually, I kind of want to redo this thing in my personal statement. Okay, great. You have time. You have your best score on record. But yeah, sometimes you don't get your best score by August, so maybe you end up taking it in September or maybe even October. But boy, every test you push off, you're just reducing your chances of getting the best scholarship you could
get. We literally saw scholarship offers coming in last year in September for the following September. I have no evidence that that's going to change. If anything, the scholarship game seems to be picking up. So I think having those applications in at the beginning of September, if you really want to play the game the right way, and if you really want your best full ride offer, I think you got to get those applications in early. There are some exceptions that can be made for, you know, let's say Anonymous gets a 169 and thinks that he or she can do better. And there are some schools where a 169 is going to get you a scholarship anyway, so you might as well just go ahead and throw in your applications. But he's talking about Stanford. You know, he's a Stanford undergrad, by the way.
Yep.
And if he's shooting for those top tier law schools, I wouldn't throw in an application to Stanford with a 169. I would wait until I had that 175. Some of those very top schools, I think Yale just doesn't make any decisions until January or something. So it can be okay to apply a little bit later to some of those schools. But for all the other schools, if you're looking to follow our advice and don't pay for law school, then you really, ideally, you're going to have your application in at the beginning of the cycle. And if that means you have to wait and just start law school in 2024, it makes no difference, ultimately.
Yeah.
I know you think it makes a difference. I promise you, a year from now, you're going to realize it makes no difference whatsoever when you start law school. I still haven't had a single alum tell me, I wish I would have started law school earlier. That is a thing no one has ever said to me. Has anyone ever said that to you? I just really wish I would have started law school last year instead of waiting for this year.
No one cares. No one's ever said that.
It's like next thing you know, they're graduating, right? That's our experience from our end of the deal. It's like the next day, it feels like.
Yeah.
And this person that we worked with throughout their application and their LSAT and everything, and this person is like graduating from law school. Or you see on LinkedIn that they're now hired at some law firm.
Yep.
That it's like tomorrow. It's just overnight. Just boom. It's just here before you know it. And that's true even if they waited an additional year as part of their cycle.
Well, here's your question, right? Has anyone ever said to us, oh, I wish I would have started law school earlier? No one's ever said that. But what people have said over and over and over again is, I'm so glad that I took away my applications with a 160 or whatever. I removed them. I took the LSAT again, got a 170 something, applied, and am on a path that's radically different from what I would have been if I had just stuck with my original plan.
Yeah. John Yin, who's been on the daily before, former student of ours, Gloomhaven buddy of mine, he was about to go to Wash U in St. Louis and not like on a half scholarship.
Which people would be celebrating.
Which is garbage because that school gives so many full rides. You know, he would have been getting scammed at Wash U.
Yep.
With his like 168 or whatever it was. He ended up taking at least one more year. I think might have been two more years, but ended up going to Harvard with a 178. And it's like, okay, well, boy, That's a big difference.
It's a totally different life. It's a different person. In 10 years, you're going to meet him and be like, okay, wow, what have you been doing? It's like astronomically different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just,
you know,
wildly
different. I heard this quote the other day. It could definitely devolve into like a platitude, because on some level it is, but I think it's still true. The quote is, hard choices, easy life. Easy choices, hard life. You know, and I think sometimes people find this to be a very hard choice. They're like, oh, I just cannot wait another year. But if you make that hard choice, boy, you're just setting yourself up for success versus setting yourself up for mediocre success.
Yeah, I think we can leave it there. I think that that's a good way of putting it. You know, I would encourage Anon taking that into consideration. Why do you need to start? I would question the foundational assumption that you think you need to start law school in 2023. Other places in this, you know, he's a 3.7 computer science from Stanford. But, unfortunately, 3.7 is not that great when you're applying to Harvard and Stanford and Yale Law School. So you really need the LSAT. But he's like, maybe I should shoot for the stars, maybe even above 172. It's like, well, wait a second, dude. To compete in these very high levels, you probably need a 175 plus.
Mm-hmm.
Computer science majors, by the way, do better than any other major on the LSAT. And so you can get there, but like you need to get your grind on the reading comprehension and figure out your problems there.
Yeah, take 6 months if you absolutely need that. That sounds like way more than you'll need, but take the time, crush it, and then get above the 75th percentile for these schools. And now you can actually consider them.
Don't rush into this, man. Take another year and just like waltz in through the front door to Harvard, Stanford, Yale with your 177.
Or for free at like the top 10 programs.
For free at Michigan or UCLA or, like plenty of other great schools. Give yourself more options instead of just rushing through, trying to sneak in the side door. Don't do it that way. All right, wrap it up.
Yeah. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.